Okay. So you're going to have to say your last name for me, but I am super happy to have Kim
Mulholland?
Mulholland. I can't even.
Yeah.
With me today. And I met Kim years ago in something that we were just talking about that I'm not going to talk about now, and very different circumstances. And now we're both in very different circumstances. And at the time, I thought you were an investor, but now I realize that you were doing other things with your family's business. And I just thought you were a VC. I didn't know your full background. So do you want to go into like how you started into business?
Yeah, let me do that. So I'm originally from Denmark, born and raised, turning 48 this week, just to tell you how old I am as well. I left Denmark when I was 20, 23 to enter the family business. And what was a little bit strange or unusual was I had actually had nothing to do with the business. I had pushed it away unintentionally in some way, and well, it had to do with issues with my father that took me 20 years later actually to solve. But I entered the business with 23, went to United States, no work permit or anything like that. Just went there to work and started in the warehouse facility, worked my way through the system and the organization. We opened a bunch of retail stores back then. We closed some of them in the financial crisis. And then in 2010, I got the opportunity to go to Asia. So I moved from the New York area to Hong Kong and was doing business out there for almost six, 7 years. And I did a lot of traveling back then, and yeah, every week was packed with travel, and the weekends it was party time and typical expat life, at least for me it was like that. Then we sold the business in 2016, and I've been in the business for 16 years at that point. And I literally woke up the day after the sale and thought, well, why am I in this business? And that was sort of the beginning of an unraveling of a lot of things. So I was pondering that question for some months, and I ended up handing in my resignation in fall 2016, and then I left the company with no plan of really what to do. And then I started as an investor in 2017. I think that's when we met each other. And I have an executive MBA from INSEAD, so I know numbers, I know business and things like that. I said, well, that's what I should do. I didn't really think about it. And I remember my brother said back then, Kim, you left on the 31st of December, and 1st of January, you were entering this new venture. Why don't you take some time to try to figure out what it is you want to do with your life? And I told him, you should mind your own business. I knew what I wanted to do. And I did that for a period of time. I gradually got more and more unhappy. And this was sort of a crazy thing, because from the outside in, from the outside view, I had everything. So financially secure, good family, good partner, health. I was living in Germany at that time. Everything was good. And at the same time, I felt so incredibly empty inside. And eventually I landed in a depression, in a burnout. And I always saw my health and my well-being like a gradual line, and say, okay, it's not going so well, but I can probably continue. And then it was like falling off a cliff.
Right.
I feel it in my body, panic attacks, thoughts about having to leave this place because I could simply not stand it. And that was sort of an awakening. So I worked with therapists, with coaches. I did the Hoffman process, where you go back into your childhood And that's where this awakening also to enter coaching came about. I've talked openly about what I was dealing with, and almost all the executives that I talked to about that were somewhere on that scale as well, of not really feeling happy, even though that they could tick all these boxes.
Yeah, so many people, I call it like comparing your insides to other people's outsides. So you see that so much on social media where everyone's like, you know, oh, my life is perfect. I'm running around Bali. I'm doing this. Or, you know, I have the house, the car, the partner, the everything. But, you know, what's happening on the inside? So it's people do that so often. They're like, oh, my God, this person has it all and everything. And it is. It's really comparing your insides or your pain or your whatever to other outsides and not actually knowing, like, I could have seen you at that time and thought, my God, this guy's got it together, he's got everything, but I'm comparing my insides to your outsides, and we don't really know what's happening with other people.
No, and I had I used to be very 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 focused on money, and also I would say almost greedy, and we're not willing to share and so forth, and I had this narrative in my head, and I was asleep at that time, even though the eyes were open and I was doing things, but I was really asleep. And I had this story in my head that if I have enough, if I have money, I will be happy and I will have no problems in my life. And now when I say that, I'm printing a little bit, because it's like, what kind of a story is that to run around with? But that was the dominating story for my entire adult life. And
so many people have that, though. So many people, they're told, like, by society that having loads of money means success, and it's not necessarily, you know, it's like if you wake up and you're happy, that's success. And I've been in some of the poorest countries in Asia, and they're some of the happiest. I've been in, like, you know, really poor villages in the countryside in Myanmar, and they will give you whatever they have. They will, you know, here, take it. And those people are happy. And same in so many rural places where people just don't have much. They will give you whatever they have, or half of, you know, I need some to eat, so you can have half of it. But that's happiness. That's success. And when you can be in nature and, you know, have your basic needs met, that's success. If, as long as you wake up in the morning, you think, it's going to be a good day. You know, I'm alive and it's going to be a good day. And that whole thing about the money part, like, money is good and you can do a lot with money. You can help the planet with money. But there was one thing that I saw where this guy, he was doing an interview with two people. And so he said, you know, how would you feel if I gave you $100,000? And the people, it was a guy and a girl, you know, on two separate screens. And they were both like, oh yeah, that would be fantastic. Oh my God, that would make my, you know, my life would be so much better. And then he's like, how about if I put it up to 1 million? Would that be okay? Oh my God, that would be amazing. And then he's like, how about 10 million? How about 10 million. How about if I give you 10 million? 10 million each. Is that okay? They're like, oh my God, that would be amazing. You know, my life would be better. That would just be phenomenal. And he's like, okay, would you still take the money if you couldn't wake up tomorrow? And they're like, no. You know, and so he's like, so isn't it worth waking up every morning and thinking this morning is worth more than $10 million? And I think when people get caught up in money, you should fall back on that thought that, you know, it's, I don't care what you give me, I wouldn't, like, not wake up.
Yeah. No, and that is really what it's all about, getting back to the essential things in life, and those are what we deem the simpler things and what we take for granted. That's being here today, it's having loved ones around us, it's being able to go into nature, taking time to get back to yourself, stay with your breath. Those are the things that that really matters at the end of the day. And I'm not saying that money is bad or anything like that. Not at all. And it's also okay to earn money. There's nothing wrong with that. But when we are sacrificing almost everything else to earn money, and also this narrative I had that when I have this money, I will be happy. And I think that that was a part of what pushed me into this burnout and depression, because this illusion that I had been chasing for so long, all of a sudden there was enough money that I could not say, well, more money will be able, then I can do other things, because I live a simple life. So I'm like, now I have enough money, but I feel completely empty inside.
And I think
this illusion was all of a sudden gone.
I think that's where you, as you said, you're meeting other executives, and they're also in this, somewhere in that spectrum of, is this it? You know, because they've got the success, they've got the money, and it's like, but they're not happy. Is this it? You know, they get to, like, they've ticked all the boxes. It's like, is this it? And that's, I think, where you get, you know, people that you think, you know, oh, this famous person has all the money and everything in the world, and then it's like, is this it? And then they, you know, commit suicide. Or and I think you've mentioned that you thought, like, is this it? You know, do I even want to be here?
I was doing the Hoffman process, that is a week long retreat back in the childhood, and there's 50 pages of questions that had to be filled out. And there was this specific question: Have you considered suicide? And I'm like, okay, if I have to be honest, I was not standing on a bridge ready to jump out, anything like that. But the thought had crossed my mind on several occasions that this year is so difficult. Is it worth it? And today I can say I'm very, very happy to be here. I'm happy in life. I'm grateful in life, and I've also been able to work through what had to be worked through, but it was difficult some years ago.
Yeah, and I don't know that everyone has to go through, like, you went through quite a dark period. Most people will have some kind of, if they're, you know, they get to the happy place and all that, and they've had, you know, they've gone the whole chasing money route, there will be thing that ticks them, or you know, some sort of form of trauma that puts them over to the point, because doing the work on ourselves is not easy. There's usually something that pushes us to do it, and it's usually pain, you know, like my 20s, you were talking about the expat work hard, play hard kind of lifestyle. My 20s were like a drunken blur of either working 80-hour weeks or partying really hard on the weekends. And, you know, it took me turning 30 to go, like, oh, you know, I better actually take care of myself and be healthy and, like, start eating healthy. And I became a Reiki master when I was 30 and, you know, started eating healthy, working out, you know, doing these things. And that was kind of like my tipping point was around then, because I was like, well, I'm not going to be around much longer if I continue this lifestyle. And it's also, I was not happy at all.
I recognize that myself also.
And we were talking before about the volunteering thing, and I'm a devotee of Satguru. When he came to Hong Kong in 2017, I was initiated by him, and I was doing yoga and meditation for many years before that, but then I've switched to all of his practices. And one of his big things is that, you know, if you want to be happy or fulfilled, really fulfilled, go and help other people, volunteer. And you were talking about how you now volunteer, and you want to tell us a little bit about that.
Maybe I can start in a different place and then get back to that. So I suffered from intense fear of heights my entire life, and it was also so bad if I went on a regular hike and there was a little bit of a cliff or something like that, I would not be able to handle that. So I decided to tackle that head on by beginning to climb. So rock climbing, we have a lot of great facilities here in Munich where I live. So I got into climbing, and then one day I was at the climbing gym together with my partner Nadia, and this was also during the period where I had a hard time. And she said, well, there's this organization that are looking for volunteers, this climbing organization, and it's a group where it's a mix between people with disabilities and people without disabilities. So I volunteer there at least a couple of times every month, and I'm almost getting a little bit emotional here. So they often say thank you for being there, and then in actuality, I'm getting so much more back, and it's and some of the people we have in our group have much more difficult situations in life than I do, and being allowed to be there together with them and see how enthusiastic they are and how they just tackle life head on and get on with things was during my dark period, that was such a help for me to be reminded that yes, I can also make it through what I'm dealing with right there, right now. So I love doing that work in that climbing group. It's so fulfilling.
Yeah, anytime I've had the pleasure of volunteering, it's just like this last weekend we had a convention, and it was a spiritual convention, and everyone that was doing it was volunteers, and it was so fulfilling to just see the joy of people. And and also with I haven't done it recently, but when we have an Isha center, the Sadhguru, like in Hong Kong, and so when I used to have more time to do volunteer work with there, and you see people like the lights open and they're like crying and they're so happy, it's very, very emotional and very beautiful.
Yeah, that's really connecting with people and being there for each other, and that's sort of the essence. And that's also what I'm experiencing when I'm coaching. That's not volunteer work. I do get paid something for it. And I was actually years ago considering, before my crisis, I was considering working with a coach, and I also spoke to the person, and then he told me what the investment would be. And even though I could have afforded it, I said, nah, let me see if I can fix this on my own. I still had money issues back then. I did not really want to invest and share my money. So the result of that was that I didn't do the coaching. So how I have it structured in my business today is that it's more affordable, and it's also because I would like to work with people long term, and help really make changes in people's life. So it's not volunteer, it's not for free, but it's a little bit in the same arena of wanting to be there for other people.
Yeah, I switched to coaching not long after I met you, and I left the business that we were discussing, and it was at that time, because I do more esoteric work. So I read the Akashic records, I'm a Reiki master, I do a lot of other healing modalities. And so I was doing this coaching to help guide business conscious entrepreneurs that could that controlled their own business using the Akashic records to who they are at soul level. And so that was so fulfilling, but the people that were going through that, then they wanted to do their own courses. And I started my first web development company in 96. So it's like, I know the tech side, I know the marketing, I know the design. And so it's not difficult for me to help people create courses. And then I found some technology to help people with courses. So that's the way I can have the biggest impact. And last year I took a year off as the CEO of a wellness Web3 company. So when I came back to coaching, I thought, where can I make the biggest impact? And that, you know, you think of like our wise elders, They used to sit around the campfire and be able to share their knowledge. That doesn't happen now because they don't have the marketing and the, you know, tech skills to be able to share their wisdom in a, you know, in a course. And so we end up with a lot of, you know, influencers, you know, 20 something coaches and things, as instead of the wise elders that should be actually creating courses. So that's why I got into the area that I can, you know, that's like you, I don't make it that expensive because I want people to be able to share their knowledge. It's, as you said, it's amazing when you can work with people and they're like, oh, you know, I just did this launch, and all this one woman, she was just, I was on a call with her yesterday. She's done her 5-day challenge and all these people, and she does this autoimmune course, and you know, she's got cancer patients that are getting better, or they're going through chemo without effects. And you know, these people, all of them that I work with, they're all light workers, wellness experts, and you know, the people that are helping other people get through, like, you know, the dark nights of the soul or whatever, to help people and to, you know, have that ripple effect. Like, you get to help lives, I get to help other people. So it like gets out there. And that's so rewarding when they're like lighting up and going, people are changing, they're getting transformation. It's, and that's just so rewarding. And and then one thing we were talking about before is you go and you sit in rivers in the middle of winter.
Let me jump a little bit and then get back to that one. So so we all have these stories in our head, right? And sometimes the stories are so ingrained that we don't even realize it anymore. It's just this autopilot we are on. And some of the stories we can observe and we believe that they're real. And I have some of those stories as well. And one of them was, I can't do cold water.
Okay.
And then I was, and this year was not in the winter, it was actually in spring. And then I was walking along the river. We live in the part of Munich where the river is running through. And then all of a sudden I'm like, is that true that I can't do cold water because I haven't tried it yet? And then I was standing there and for 20 minutes, and I'm going to walk to another place at the river and look there. I know the water looks exactly as cold. And then I tried to get in it, and I was in it for 30 seconds, just sitting a little bit, and it was excruciating cold, even though it was not that cold. And then I'm like, okay, I just did that. Maybe I can stay longer. Maybe I can immerse my entire body in the river. And then I tried that, and that also worked. And then, of course, what came up was like, well, what other stories do I actually have in my head that I'm telling myself that are not, they're not true? So this thing with the cold water has developed. So now I also sit in the river in the winter, and I have this top on my porridge, my porch, where the water is freezing in the winter, and I will...
I've seen you do that.
The ice, and then I will sit there for a couple of minutes and just breathe. And what is so amazing is that the clarity, all this chatter in the mind, is completely gone. So there's this level of awareness that is just it's unbelievable.
Did this come from the Wim Hof
thing? I saw one of his videos on YouTube, and I think he was the one who inspired me. And then I started with a little bit of a cold shower, and it was terrible, but I stuck with it. And for me, it's just a simple example of how we can do so much more than we believe. So there's not anything unique about me that I can sit in cold water. Anybody can sit in cold water if they let go of that story saying, no, I cannot sit in the cold water.
Right.
And it's this part of awakening up, right? That if we are conscientious and we are mindful, then all these old stories will start to fall away.
I've still got the cold thing. I do the cold showers in the summer, but not in the winter.
Ah, so there's a dominating story there about that it works in the summer, but I cannot do it in the winter. Maybe I hear cold water challenge coming up here.
Yeah, I did the ice bucket challenge, but I did it in the summer and with a pool next to me, so I could like do the ice bucket challenge and then jump in the pool.
Okay. Yeah.
But I can do the like because I was in Sweden for a bit and or I lived in Sweden for a bit and I could do the jumping in the fjords as long as I had the sauna to go back to, or just you know, the sauna fjord, and I can do the hot, super hot and super cold as long as the super hot's there. So
yeah, that's the challenge to leave the warm part out and then go directly into the cold water.
Right. Yeah. There's a place in California called Harbin. It's actually an I think clothes are optional kind of place, and it's a natural springs. And there was one time when I had like four broken ribs, and I went to California, and I was doing the extreme hot, like Japanese onsen kind of, you know, tingle hot, and then the freezing cold, and I was going between the two, and about eight times back and forth, you know, sit for a couple minutes. After the first couple times, you can't actually tell if you're in hot or cold. You're just tingly.
Yeah.
But the thing is the ribs, I'm sure that, you know, the amount of blood that was circulating and everything, the ribs got better so much quicker after that.
Yeah. But that's interesting that you say that because the Western society is if there's something wrong with me, I need a pill and I need or surgery, I need it instantly fixed, right? And then there's all this wisdom, if it's Chinese medicine or if it's Ayurveda and Qigong and yoga, meditation, breathing, nutrition. There's so much we can do there, so we allow the body to be able to heal it itself. And that's also what I've experienced over the last couple of years getting out of this crisis, that when people say, well, how do you, what medication did you take? That's the first question. But I didn't do any medication. Wow. What clinic did you go to? I didn't go to a clinic either. I have changed the way I do sports. I've changed my nutrition, my sleep schedule. I do yoga, I do Qigong, I do breath exercises. So I do these things. But how long do you have to do that? I probably have to do it my entire life, but that's okay. It's not a sacrifice having to do those things. It's a gift that I'm able to, and I also have the insight and the knowledge how that works.
The way Sadhguru puts it is that you don't want your body to be a hindrance. And when you see people that haven't moved all their life, you know, they get old and they're getting disabilities and things. It's like, I mean, I go every morning, I go for a hike out in the mountains, and then I, you know, do a bit of meditation before, and then I come back and finish my practices. You know, an hour or two of meditation a day is, you know, it's not something I'm going to give up. My walk in nature is not something I'm going to give up. And I've actually structured my life so that I have that time in the morning to do that, you know, and I meet a friend to go swimming in the ocean at least once a week. And I go, you know, swimming, I do stop when it gets cold. I do. I might try to do the swimming like more consistently as it starts to get colder and see if I can keep it up at least every now and again during the winter. But it's like those are such, they're not luxuries, and they're not something I would ever stop, because it's, you know, I've got a decade on you, and it's like I want to be fit and running around in the mountains and everything for at least another 3 or 4 decades. You know, it's like it's not something that, and I like that thinking, that the way he puts it, you're not doing this to have, you know, a nice bum or, you know, a perfect body or a six pack. You're doing this so that your body is not a hindrance, so you can do whatever you want no matter what your age. And, you know, I follow more Ayurvedic eating and And but I've lived in Asia most of my life, almost all of my adult life, and so it's kind of natural to be doing those kind of practice. I've got like green tea with goji berries right now, but the it's more the just if you felt not good, you know how much it's worth it to just do and something that's going to make you feel good and keep you, and especially being in nature is just so like beautiful that it, if I don't know, if I didn't have the ability to go walking in nature, that would be depressing to me, very depressing to me. So it's like I keep doing it so that I can keep doing it. And I remember watching this, it was a commercial for some, health practice or something, and it had two men or two young boys, and they started from like a young, like they were showing them simultaneously, and there was one that was having healthy food, one was having like cold cereal and a donut for breakfast, and it showed them like their habits throughout their life. And yeah, my 20s were not certainly not healthy, but when I got to 30 and I started like changing things, I'd like to think that building those practices over time and staying relatively healthy over time, it's an exponential increase. And then by the end, there was an elderly man who was like healthy and picking up his grandchildren and going for bicycle rides with his grandchildren. And then the other one was in bed. And it's like, which one would you rather be? My sister and I had very, very different lifestyles. And I'm not going to say her lifestyle was what contributed to it, but she passed at 51 because of cancer. And it's like we make choices. And if you want to have processed foods and smoke and do this and that and whatever, it's like, some people smoke and drink and whatever till they're and live till they're 90, but there is a correlation between not living so long and not having healthy practices.
And that's the crazy thing that I sometimes hear people also bring up these examples. But this person lived very unhealthy and lived to 100, and I know this other person that was very healthy, and he or she passed away earlier. And then to say, well, then you can just, it doesn't matter how you live. And I think that's a shame. Because of course it matters. I also sometimes hear people say, well, it's sort of too late to do something, and
Too
I
late.
think that's also terrible. But no, it's never too it's never too late, and I've also experienced that in my own body when I had this had this this crisis. I could hardly get out of bed, and I had no energy, and it lasted for months, and then slowly I start saying, well, I will live in a different way, and today I feel healthy, happy. I'm fit. I do my yoga, I do my climbing, I do my ice swimming, and I think doing all that, it also enables me to do business in a better way, and in a mindful way. And I think that's also my coaching in practice when I work with clients. That is sort of the starting point, that if you feel good in your body and your mind, you're likely to make better decisions in the business, you're likely to lead other people better, and you'll also have better business outcomes. But if you don't feel well, you run around and make poor decisions.
Yeah, I mean, if people, when people are grumpy, I think, well, what brought them to that point? Was it like something in their childhood? Was it, did they have a bad morning? Did they not get their coffee? Or what got them to being grumpy? Because I don't think people are necessarily naturally grumpy, but you can ungrumpy yourself by having, doing the meditation, doing the movement, doing the healthy living, doing eating well, and then you're not such a jerk to other people if you're not feeling bad in yourself. You've had a good morning, you know, you got up, you got some good nutrition in your body, you did some something for yourself, you're going to be a nicer person.
Yeah, and it does not mean that life is perfect and there's not ups and downs, but when we do something for the mind and the body, then it's also easier to handle those rougher patches. And as you say, nobody is born grumpy. I totally agree with that. All these patterns that we are picking up, especially in childhood and in the younger years, that can be unlearned. That's totally durable. And then it's going to take more than a week or two probably to unlearn some of the things. Maybe some of it would be a lifelong practice, but again, that's about that journey, right? So then you take steps along the way. I can also let go of being greedy and want all the money for me. No, I can also share. I can give back. I already have more than enough. And then when that little voice is coming back, no, I want more. No, it's the old voice. Now we live in a different way, and that we can practice with everything in life.
Yeah, beautiful. And the it's very much a mindset of just being a better person and like being better inside you. And I think COVID actually had a good effect on like helping people to really question, do I have to commute 3 hours a day to, you know, this office to work for someone else? And a lot of people, you know, there was the great whatever it's called, where a lot of people resigned because they started questioning, why am I working for other people and spending my life? I come from Northern California in the wine country, and to get to there to San Francisco on a good day when there's no traffic, it's like an hour. But there are people that, you know, when it's commute time, it's 2 hours to San Francisco and then 2 hours back, because it's the same people coming back to their homes. Yes, they live in a nice home and then, you know, in the Napa Valley, and they work in the city. And so people started questioning that sort of thing. Why do I commute to do this? And also with the whole question about what is our governments and, you know, doctors telling us versus what we know for ourselves in terms of like health. And I think a lot of people started questioning, you know, consensus reality in terms of like what they do for their living, what they do for their body, what they do for, you know, for themselves. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And each of us, we have the responsibility for ourselves. And had a conversation with a friend some weeks ago, and he was talking about how difficult it is because we are being bombarded with, we're being manipulated every single day in the news and advertising where we work. And yes, I understand that. I also live in that world. But you have a choice. If you want to open a newspaper every single day and listen to the news every single day, or do you do it in maybe half an hour or an hour, hour and a half, once a week, you catch up on what has happened, and not the sensational news, but actually the factual news, and then you put it away.
Yeah.
You have a choice, and also if a doctor is saying, well, you should do this and this, well, you have a choice to get a second opinion, a third opinion. You have, it is your choice, even though you have all these influences. And I think you're right that COVID has also helped us wake up and question what we were told.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think we've got about 15 minutes over time, and most people's attention span is very short. So let's wind this up. It's been beautiful speaking with you. And
thank you so much.
And thank you so much for being here. And
I
this didn't get streamed into the group, but we did it, and it'll be in the podcast. It'll be in the Conscious Business Strategies podcast. And if you want, yeah, and I'll get your website from you, so people can, if they're listening to the podcast, they can go to your website and check out more about your amazing work that you do. And I think I normally see you on LinkedIn, so I'll see you on LinkedIn.
Very good. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.